Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on this very important call. My name is Tyson Johnson. I'm director of the National Freight Division. We have a number of speakers tonight. Secretary Treasurer Tom Kuegel, General President James Hoppe, Assistant Director Gordon Sweeten, and to further help discuss and introduce to you the MOU, we'll have General Counsel Brad Raymond, staff employee Ian Gold, and our financial experts, Mr. Michael Glanzer with Glanzer Company, LLC, and John Moses with Merge Global. Again, thank you very much for joining us today. We are going to do our very best in this one-hour call period to give you a firm explanation on the MOU, why we have done it, the intent of the MOU, and what the specific provisions mean. And with that, I will introduce and hand over to you our General Secretary Treasurer, Tom Kuegel. Mr. Kuegel.
Well, thank you, Tyson. Good evening, brothers and sisters, and I want to thank you for joining us on this call. You know, nobody understands better than we do how extremely difficult these times are, and it's probably the worst that I have seen in my 52 years in the freight industry. When I started as a young man, 2 years on the dock and 17 years at P&D, I never dreamed I would live to see us go through what we've gone through these last few years. You know, when I started in this industry, it was regulated, and we had thousands of LTL companies. The National Master Freight Agreement that Jim's father put together was the teamster's attempt to create a national wage, health insurance, and pension standards. And we did that successfully until the anti-union assholes in government and corporate America deregulated our trucking industry. Our standards of pay and benefits have been definitely under attack since 1979. And today at YRC, we are dealing with the final unraveling of this great industry caused by trucking deregulation. If there is any hope to maintain decent standards in this industry, we need and we have strived to have YRC survive. For YRC to survive, we have to do some changes in those standards we fought hard, really, to set many years ago. And never in my wildest dreams did I believe we would be in what we're going through today. But you know what? This is about you and your family and your livelihood. This is one of the most difficult decisions you will have to make on top of the sacrifices you've already made to keep YRC going. And as General Hoppe knows, we put together the best package we could, but the decision on whether it is something you can accept is yours and your family. And so I encourage you to review the materials carefully before you vote. And thank you so very much for joining us on this call. Is Mr. Hoppe available? I know he's running a little bit behind, Ian.
He has not joined the call just yet, so I think we'll have Tyson take it from here.
All right, we'll turn it back to Tyson Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Kuegel. Again,
yes,
brothers
sir.
And sisters, thank you very much for joining us today. Gordon Sweeten and myself are going to cover the specific contract modifications, starting with item 8 on the MOU. And following that, the other bits and pieces and the legalities of the MOU will turn back to Brad Raymond and Ian Gold. First, I would like to say that this does include a 2-year extension to the current contract, which will take the term of the contract through March 31, 2015. With that, we have pre-negotiated wage increases for 2013 and 2014 of 40 cents an hour that will be impacted by the 15% pay reduction. Health and welfare for the out years of the contract has been predetermined at 35 cents a year for the years of 2013 and 2014, which will take us through the term of the contract March 31, 2015. The contract modifications included in the national portion of the NMFA the following modifications to the 2008-13 NMFA and supplemental agreements are included as part of the first 39 articles of the National Master Freight Agreement and cover the entire NMFA bargaining unit as modified by the General Executive Board of the International Union by its resolution of November 24, 2009. And we have incorporated this as a portion of the national contract to make it a national standard. These conditions that we are going to give you will apply in all four regions to every NMFA carrier. The exceptions will be the Glenmore Group, the USF Rudaway Group, which will be incorporated into the MOU, but their conditions will be reworked in accordance with the standards of their contract to meet the equal sacrifice. The first condition is the four-hour guaranteed local cartage employee. The employer recognizes the need of the employers to create job opportunities and efficient operations during this period of financial restructuring and recession. For this reason, there will be established a four-hour guaranteed local cartage employee classification. The local cartage classification will enhance the employer's ability to compete and provide work for a substantial number of laid-off employees. The four-hour guaranteed local cartage worker shall have no impact on regular straight-time work opportunities of active full-time employees, unassigned employees, 10 percenters or SHAPEs, as defined by the 2008-13 NMFA and its supplements. What we're saying there, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, for those people that are laid off, they will have an opportunity to take a four-hour guaranteed position. This position will not be forced to any laid-off employee. They will work subject to a four-hour guarantee. If they exceed 6 hours, they will be guaranteed 8 hours. With this, there will be no back-to-back shifts or overlapping shifts with these four-hour laid-off employees. Failing the laid-off employees to take these positions, they will then go to casual employees under the same terms and conditions at a 10% ratio of the active board. I stated earlier in the language that I read, this will have no impact on the 8-hour regular employee. Whatever 8-hour or 10-hour regular jobs you have, absences will be filled with laid-off people on an 8-hour vacancy in accordance with the contract. In addition to the 4-hour guarantee, the employees that accept this work will draw hourly payments on their health and welfare and pension plans. Some plans currently accept hourly contributions, some don't. These are terms and conditions that will have to be worked out with each fund as this goes into place. But again, these are 10% jobs of your active board. They do not erode the regular full-time jobs you have. Hopefully, this will be an opportunity to get additional laid-off people back to work and making health and welfare and pension contributions. But again, this does not replace an 8- or 10-hour job. Next modification to the contract is drops and hooks and spotting of trailers. At end-of-the-line terminals, dark terminals, a road driver that comes into the terminal may drop and hook his or her trailer or trailers and spot trailers to the dock or pull trailers from the dock, even though there are local cartage dock employees on duty. This does not apply to distribution centers or break bulks. It means simply what it means. A road driver would be subject to a push and pull if equipment was available. It will still be pre-strung by the city or dock employees. Absent of equipment being available, a road driver would do his complete drop and hook. With that, I'm going to turn things over to finish the rest of the contract modifications to Assistant Director Gordon Sweeten. Gordon?
Thanks, Tyson. The next one is Sunday through Saturday flex work week. In all supplements, the employer is permitted to have Sunday through Saturday start times using the following language. A, the work week shall be scheduled for 5 consecutive days. In addition to and in conjunction with Monday through Friday work week, the employer shall be entitled to establish bids over the weekend with the following limitations. 1 to 10 employees will equal 2 bids. 11 to 20 employees will equal 3. 21 to 40 will equal 4. 41 or more will equal 10% of the roster. In the event business levels over the weekend increase, additional bids may be added according to the following formula. Using a premium pay employee for five consecutive weekends would trigger the posting of one additional bid at the discretion of the employer. This will be applied to pickup and delivery and dock operations at the end-of-the-line location and pickup and delivery operations at distribution centers and break bulks. That means that break bulks, the ones that do not have over weekend work with pickup and delivery, can have that pickup and delivery work at those. At the end-of-the-line terminal, they can either do pickup and delivery and or work on dock. Weekend bid work shall be paid at the straight-time rate. Any vacancy of 1 week or greater may be offered on a voluntary hold-down basis at the straight-time rate. All other weekend absences may be filled in accordance with the applicable supplement. Means if it's a five-day known absence, they will offer that to 10%ers, shapes, or anybody that's on call. If you do not want to take it, you do not have to take it. Weekend work that's off, the guys that covers weekend bids that's off one day at a time will be covered under your supplement, however that works. In Central, I know it would go to the time and a half people. Pre-stringing trailers. At the end of the line and dark terminals, pre-stringing sets will continue as is presently performed, if equipment and freight are available. If equipment and freight are not available, the road driver will be instructed to hook his or her set. In accordance with the supplement, penalty pay will apply if this is not followed. So it should be the same thing as we got right now. Some supplements do have that, but most all the supplements in our region have that. Drop and pick. Road drivers will be permitted to make one pickup or delivery en route to his, her destination terminal, and he, she is also able to make one pickup or delivery en route to his, her return trip. This applies to all road supplemental operations. It's exactly as it says right now, guys. They can make one drop or one pick going in and the same thing coming back out, and it covers all supplements. Road casuals. All supplemental areas will allow casual road drivers. In those supplements which do not currently have road casuals, they shall use the method of 12 tours and 60 days for adding to the seniority board. If a supplemental area currently has casual road drivers, the current application for adding drivers to the seniority board shall continue to apply. With respect to boundaries of the supplemental areas, meet and turns will be permitted. The meet and turn point will be as equitable as possible for each of the drivers. That means that if, just like the South running into the Central is not allowed with casuals right now, but you'll be able to run meet and turns as equal as possible. Start times. Start times in effect today will remain the same. In addition to the existing start times, the company will be allowed to add three additional start times in a 24-hour period. There shall be no more than 12 total start times unless they currently have them. Example, if you currently have five start times, you will be allowed to have eight start times. Six start times could go to nine. 10 start times currently would go to 12. These start times include local cartage, dock, hostling classifications. Lunch breaks. Dock employees shall be required to take a 30-minute lunch break between the fourth and sixth hour of his or her shift. P&D employees shall be entitled to either a 30-minute or a 60-minute lunch break as determined daily at the employer's discretion between the fourth and sixth hour of his or her shift. That means if our P&D driver's out and he's got his deliveries all made, it's an hour before he goes to making his pickups, they can't assign him to take an hour off. The lunch break cannot be split. It has to be in one thing, and it has to be completed by the end of the sixth hour. Hostling across job classification. When someone bids or is assigned a hostling job, he, she will be required to do any type of hostling required. Example, hook road units, city units, or trailers to and from the dock. If you've got separate dock bids or hostling bids and you've got separate road hook bids, they can all be used across the board, mainly to get the drivers out that's sitting on the clock waiting to get out. Reduced break time. All locations that currently have two 15-minute breaks will be reduced to two 10-minute breaks unless otherwise required by law. exception are straight eights and 4 10-hour shifts, which will remain the same. There will be an additional 10-minute break after the 10th hour and once every 2 hours thereafter. Vacation. Reduce vacation by 1 week for all employees with 4 or more weeks of vacation using the current method of computing vacation pay. What that means is if you've got 4 or 5 weeks coming up on this following year, you will be reduced 1 week. Anything that you have earned under last year or have earned up to this year, you will be able to continue to take. There is a memo that has been put out to all the local unions. I would suggest any member that's on this needs any more clarification, you should get with your local union for a copy of that MOU and clarification. Tyson, I think that covers that.
Good job, Gordon. Thank you very much. I would tell you, in addition to the local union having this clear explanation on the application of the vacation, it is also posted tonight on the Teamster website. That's www.teamster.org. And again, just to further emphasize what Gordon said, any vacation you have accrued in 09 or 2010 is not impacted by this MOU. In fact, there are, based on certain anniversary dates, there will be employees that qualify for their 2011 vacation based on the 60% rule prior to January 1 of 11. But no employee will forfeit any vacation, and no employee will forfeit more than 1 week of vacation. One other thing I would like to backtrack and mention on the four-hour guarantee. I told you that it was 10% of the active board, and that is a true statement. But it will be in some locations where there are minimal number of employees, it will be no less than 2. I have been advised that our general president is now caught up with us. He is on the line, and with that, I would like to introduce to you our general president, James P. Hoppe. General President Hoppe.
Well, thank you, Tyson. Thank you, Gordon. And thank you for everybody else for joining us on this important call. We have been working very hard on this, as everybody knows. Everybody knows the recession has not let up, and you know, our hopes for YRC coming back because of the recession have not happened. YRC continues to struggle during the recession and is basically going backwards. They're losing some big business, and we're certainly concerned about it. But most of all, we're concerned about our members and the 35,000 jobs and about approximately 21,000 that are working right now. We're concerned about the people that are laid off, and we're concerned about the families. So we go about this business, and we really have, you know, 2 options here, and we weighed them very, very carefully. One of them was just let nature take its course and the company go out of business. We'd have another CF or whatever you want to call it, and everybody knows what a disaster that was. And, you know, secondly, we also knew that we could sit down with the company and basically go through a financial restructuring to say we've got to change the way this company does business because the members have sacrificed. They sacrificed in the first vote, they sacrificed in the second vote, and now they're being asked to sacrifice again. And our position was, wait a minute, you know, and the way this company is going, it doesn't appear that any amount of sacrifice will keep them afloat. So what we came up with, there has to be, and we're gonna, you're going to hear about this, a complete financial restructuring of this company. You know, we can change work rules, and we can do this, and we can do that, but most importantly, they've got to change the way they do business. So we have designed and talked with them about a major structuring that would lower the amount of debt they have and have a new cash infusion from maybe some investor or whatever, and that is what the company is working on. That is the basis of what we're doing here. This is really a two-pronged program. Number one, it is, you know, these adjustments, which are painful to all of us. But second of all, that the company will restructure. One is conditioned upon the other. If they don't restructure, then we don't give these concessions. No one likes to do this. I want everybody to understand this. This is painful to all of us. But the options are very, very limited. There are no more jobs. I mean, we're down to 2 companies that are on National Master Freight. everybody knows what's going on in the economy. And if we lost these jobs, it isn't like the old days when you go across the street and go to work for another company, you know, working in your town. So that time is gone. So everybody knows how important these jobs are. And every time I see a yellow roadway YRC driver, I see that, you know, he's still working. He's still being able to pay his bills, and, you know, I take heart in that. Our major concern is the members. Our major concern is making keeping this company alive so our members have jobs, that they have health care, and that we keep this thing alive. Ultimately, the decision is yours. And one thing we did not feel that we had the right to do was to just basically shut them down because that wouldn't be fair to you. So we have to make decisions. And ultimately, it's your decision because it's your job. The future of this company eventually will be in your hands. So these are tough times. We have worked very, very hard on these changes in the contract, changes in the work rules. We have tried to make them as less impact as we can, you know, but keeping your jobs and keeping your benefits and keeping your wages up. This is where we're at today. I think everybody out there knows what it's like to be working. And we also know about Holland and New Penn and Redaway and all the other connected companies. So all of this has to get done together. We're working on this together, but ultimately it's going to be your choice. I really want to thank, you know, also Tom Kegel for, you know, his participation in this program. He's worked very hard on it. But now we're down to the details, and I'm going to turn it back to Tyson to explain from here what we have left. We have a number of explanations about the finances and about different parts of the MOU. So, Tyson, with that, I'm going to turn this back to you.
Okay.
Thank you, General President Hava. Brothers and sisters, as the General President said, the General President, myself, the General Executive Board did not have the right to shut YRC down. We could have said no, but a decision was made. We do what we can, and ultimately we allow the members to make the final decision. And as I told the two-man committee last week, we weren't there to give them a sales pitch. We weren't there to make an endorsement. We were there to explain and give to them what we had done, to justify why we had done it, and to ask them to allow the member to have the right to vote. And that's what we're doing. This is your right to vote. Up or down, good or bad, you make the final decision with this. But this afternoon, I was contacted by a rank-and-file member. He is a member of Local 41 in Kansas City, Missouri. He tells me that he is a job steward at USF Holland, and he asked to speak this evening. His name is Carl Borelli. And at this time, I'm going to give Carl Borelli a few minutes. As pressed as time as we are, bear that in mind, brother. But you have the air.
Thank you, Tyson. The reason I wanted to talk to everybody tonight, I didn't want to talk to you as a union brother, but as a family man. Ultimately, the important decision we have to make is going to affect our families, our way of life, and our ability to keep them safe and secure. For 30 years, I've been fortunate enough to work under union contracts. Not only have I had superior wages and benefits, but the most important thing that I had was my voice in the workplace. I can tell you, after working under union contracts, I'd hate to think of having it any other way. Everybody knows that for 2.5 years, FedEx, Conway, and all the other non-union carriers, through predatory pricing and the rumors of bankruptcy, have tried to destroy us. Well, somebody needs to tell them we're still here. I want to share a story with you about the meetings we had over the weekend. While we were having our stewards meeting Friday to discuss the presentations that were going to be made over the weekend, a delivery came to our local. It was a rug that the president of our local had ordered for the office. The rug got there. It was a 5x5 black rug, gold Teamsters on the rug. Nothing was wrong with the rug. The problem was that FedEx delivered the rug. And I can't tell you, when he told them to take it back, I'd never been more proud of him. because he did the right thing. Our leaders in Washington are doing the right thing. They're putting their careers on the line to do what's right by the membership. And for that, General President Hoffa, Tyson Johnson, Gordon Sweetin, I have to say thank you. I think all of our local leaders around the country need to take this example and put it to use. Right now is not the time for division. We need to rally the troops, and we need to dig in. The old-timers that raised me would in no way understand anybody wanting to vote no. Think about it. A no vote puts in the hands of FedEx, Conway, and all those companies that tried to destroy us exactly what they wanted. And I say if they want it, they need to fight a lot harder than that. I went through this 7-8 years ago, maybe 9 years ago with Consolidated Freightways, and I can tell you, when the rug gets pulled out from under you and you lose the way that you take care of your family and you have no chance of saving that job, it is the most gut-wrenching experience that you'll ever go through. And I wouldn't wish it on my own enemy, my worst enemy. But I can tell you this, we're fortunate. Because of the strength of the Teamsters, we have an opportunity not just to save YRC, but to save the legacy of the Teamsters, the freight division. When you think of the Teamsters, you think of trucking. That's what this union was built on the back of all of us, all those who came before us. We need to remember that. We need to honor the old-timers by doing the right thing and voting yes. You vote yes, you honor their memory. We need to vote yes so we can preserve our jobs, and we need to vote yes so that anyone behind us will have a better way of life. Having said that, I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk to everyone. God bless you, and God bless our union.
Thank you, Carl. Brothers and sisters, now I'm going to call on our general counsel, Brad Raymond, and he will explain the legal language that is in the MOU. Brad?
Thank you, Tyson. Good evening, brothers and sisters. I'm going to walk through probably for about 5 minutes or so what I think we all consider to be the significant parts of the MOU. It's a very technical document with a lot of moving parts, but I'm going to try to hit the most significant ones. First and foremost is the fact that this MOU is conditioned upon a successful financial restructuring of YRC Worldwide, and I'm actually reading or going from the document itself. If you want to follow along, it's paragraph 2 in the MOU. And basically what it says is the contract concessions are conditioned upon successful and satisfactory concessions from the company's banking institutions, the lenders, and also upon a satisfactory terms being negotiated with new investors. Both of those have to occur, and quite frankly, if they don't, A, it's game over, and B, the MOU is not in effect. So that's really the first and foremost condition of this agreement, is that we get satisfactory concessions from the lender group and satisfactory arrangements with new investors. Second of all, in the third paragraph of the MOU, there is an extension of the NMFA for the Yellow Roadway companies for an additional 2 years to March 31st of 2015. I know that Tyson said that, but it's something to certainly emphasize. Next, with respect to the pension funds, I know that when we had this call the last time, we talked about the temporary cessation of contributions, the fact that contributions were not made beginning July of 2009, and were supposed to have been restarted January 1st. Well, that's not going to happen. It can't happen at this point, but what we've negotiated is that effective on June 1st of 2011, that is approximately 5 months after they were supposed to have recommenced under the previous MOU, there will be a restarting of pension contributions at the rate of 25% of the rate that previously existed prior to January of 2009. In other words, one quarter of the pension contributions will be tendered to each of the affected pension funds. Because of complications in the law, the funds will have a number of options. Some of the funds can accept those contributions and adjust the accruals based upon those contributions so that they're essentially accruing benefits for those of you who are covered by those funds based upon the lesser contributions. Some of the funds are not in a position either at that time or perhaps ever under the current legal rules to accept the lesser contribution. So we've provided additional options for those funds. One of them is to escrow the funds so that we can resolve the legal issues. The other option is to allow them to pay down the debt that was caused when they did not make contributions for approximately 4 months in the early stages of 2009. In either case, one of the options that does not exist is for the company to retain those funds. Rather, it's our insistence that they're going to make the contributions, and then we will resolve the issues with our funds to provide you with the best benefit we can possibly provide under the existing legal climate. And we'll continue to work on that issue. Additional provisions that I think you should be aware of, first of all, wage increases. Existing formula that existed under the prior MOU, which was that wage increases scheduled to take effect in April of 2011, April of 2012, remain in effect. And in addition to that, there will be two additional wage increases in April 1 of 2013 and April 1 of 2014. They will be at the 15% reduced rate, so in effect, the 40-cent wage increase due April 1st, 2013 will be a 34-cent wage increase. In addition to that, there will be the contract modifications that Tyson and Gordon have discussed, which are certainly more technical than I can necessarily deal much with. And then there are a number of provisions in the MOU that are similar, if not identical, to the provisions in the prior agreements. First and foremost, on paragraph 9, the equal sacrifice, we insist that the non-union employees share equally in the sacrifice that the brothers and sisters of our organization have given. We also provide for health and welfare contributions to be made going into the final 2 years of the agreement, which were not part of course, the existing NMFA. So an additional 35-cent per hour in 2013 and an additional 35-cent per hour in 2014. Again, the objective here is to preserve as much as possible and maintain the health and welfare benefits that you and your family rely on. The extension of recall rights for laid-off Teamsters from 5 to 10 years remains in this MOU. In addition, this MOU contains a dispute resolution procedure that is consistent with the prior MOU, which is essentially that there is a truncated procedure with the co-chairs of TINFINC, that's the general president, and Tyson Johnson, counterparts from the company who try to resolve matters. If they can't resolve these matters under this MOU, then we go back to the grievance resolution procedure in the NMFA. There are provisions dealing with new hires, which, of course, we certainly hope and expect at some point are going to come into play. There are provisions for ample access to the employer's financial records, and I will tell you that during the course of these discussions and in prior discussions, one thing we have not lacked significantly is access to up-to-date financial information from this company. Needless to say, they're not ashamed to give it to us because, quite frankly, it's not very helpful to their position. But the fact of the matter is they've given us reams and reams of information. We've had experts who will talk to you in a minute who have had ample access to it and have analyzed it in detail. There will be the subcommittee that I mentioned previously to monitor compliance, particularly with the equal sacrifice provisions of this agreement. There are work preservation provision in the MOU that is designed to prohibit the employer from establishing or buying non-union companies to essentially divert our work to. And there are snapback provisions in the event that this agreement is not ratified. There will be a snapback. In the event of a bankruptcy filing, there would be a snapback. And in the event of a change in the current control of YRC, there would be a snapback. There is a card check and neutrality provision for any non-union operations. The company has agreed that it will recognize and bargain based upon a card check showing. And there is a provision for various other provisions that were contained in the prior MOU. But when all is said and done, we've continued essentially the provisions of the MOU with the additions that I just mentioned. and I'll turn it back to Tyson.
Thank you, Brad. With that, I'd like to make a brief statement. The explanation on the vacation is posted now on the website. We had a detailed conference call yesterday with the local unions. Questions that were raised at various union meetings from Friday through Sunday, we have compiled those questions and those answers. They will as well be posted tomorrow on the website. And it covers the questions about New Penn, about Reddaway, about USF Holland, why we had to add 2 years to the contract, all of the major questions that we have heard. But I would encourage you to take a look at the website to that Q&A and get answers to those questions. With that now, I'm going to turn it over to Ian Gold. Ian?
Tyson, let's just turn it over to the moderator for a second so he can explain how people could ask questions on this call.
Okay, very
thanks,
good.
Ian.
Mr. Moderator?
Thanks, Ian and Tyson. We are going to try to get to some questions later in the call. If you'd like to ask a question, press star 3 on your phone now. You'll be placed into a question queue, and an operator will take down your question. We'll answer the questions that come up most frequently at the end of the call. Again, if you want to be placed into the queue to leave your question with one of our operators, please press star 3 now. And keep in mind, we can't get to every question because we anticipate a very high volume, but we'll get to those that came up the most, and hopefully we'll be able to address the ones we weren't able to get to on the call in writing. Thanks, and I'll turn it back over
Mr.
to Tyson.
Mr. Moderator, we will have someone available tomorrow. If the person asking the question will leave a name and phone number along with this question, he will get a call back tomorrow. We will answer every question, okay?
And okay, there will also be an opportunity for anyone who didn't get through to an operator to leave us a message at the end of the call, and we'll listen to all those recordings and, again, get back to everyone.
Okay, thank you, Tyson. Thank you. And thank you, Ed. So, Tyson, I just wanted to cover a few things. As Brad mentioned in paragraph 2, it references a term sheet. And what we want to do now is walk people through how the two documents live and work together. I think it's safe to say we approach this whole process as a corporate restructuring outside of bankruptcy. And the reason, you know, everybody understands what happens or what has happened to any LTL carrier that has gone into bankruptcy. So we've been trying to avoid that process at all costs. So we approach this in assembling a team of experts that you would have in any situation where you're trying to restructure a company of this size. What that takes is a financial and strategic consulting firm, which we went out and retained. That company is Merge Global. It's a firm that specializes in transportation and logistics industries. They've been involved with us for quite some time now, and really understanding the financial difficulties of the company, the operating difficulties of the company in context of the overall freight industry. And we think we have a pretty good handle on the information that the company is providing. We have an ability to challenge some of the data presented and, you know, really push the company to make sure they're providing us the correct information. So we'll have someone from Merge Global speaking in a few minutes. Also, in this type of restructuring, you need investment banking services. And in that case, we've retained and are utilizing an investment banking firm that specializes in providing financial and strategic advice to unions. This company is Glanzer & Company, and we'll have its principal, Michael Glanzer, walk us through sort of the structure and of the term sheet that is part of this latest restructuring plan that we have presented. Glanzer and Company has done work for a number of unions in the United States, including some major unions, UAW, United Steelworkers, and United Food and Commercial Workers, in addition to unions around the world, particularly in Europe and Africa. Rounding out the team, we also had securities and corporate restructuring lawyers that are familiar with transactions of this type of size and the intricacies that go on when you are attempting this type of restructuring outside of the bankruptcy process. And finally, we've also retained outside ERISA experts to help us navigate the pension issues. So that's the team, and again, we've approached it in a way, again, outside of bankruptcy, but we needed to assemble the team to be able to properly advise us on the best way to get to a viable, sustainable company. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Michael Glanzer of Glanzer & Company to walk us through the prime concepts of the term sheet. Michael?
Thank you, Ian. General President, I think, hit the nail on the head when he suggested that the approach that was taken was one in which you're prepared potentially to offer some concessions to help save the company, but that it comes with a set of conditions attached to those. And what the term sheet does is identifies for you some of those principal conditions. And they really come in the form of three major requirements. The first is a set of financial requirements, the second are a set of timeline requirements, and the third are some participation requirements. On the financial requirements, it basically requires the company to convert a substantial amount of its debt into equity. That is, if you're asking the banks or requiring the banks to basically take the debt burden substantially off the company. Secondly, you are requiring basically that the company be recapitalized with approximately $300 million of new equity infusion in order to allow the company to sustain itself and grow. Third, amongst the financial requirements, is that the Teamsters would participate in the equity in relationship to their concessions and to what other parties might put in the way of new equity. There are a host of other financial requirements. I won't touch on them now, but I think we can certainly do so if that's helpful later on. But I just wanted to make clear that the three that I've identified are not the entire universe. The timeline requirements are relatively straightforward. The company has to have a definitive agreement with a new investor by December 31st of this year. If it fails to do that, the banks are required to convert their debt into equity, or the Teamsters may withdraw their concessions. Second major timeline event is by March 31st, the company has to have closed on the new equity investment. And again, if the company has failed to achieve that, the Teamsters are not required to continue to offer the concessions that might be voted upon here. From a process and participation point of view, the requirements there are basically to put the Teamsters into a situation where, with both respect to the banks and with respect to the new equity, you're in a position to negotiate what the shape of this company might look like going forward, and are given under the term sheet information and the ability to interject and protect your interests in this corporate transaction, which is somewhat different than the exercise you've been involved in the past. That is to say, whenever somebody gives an indication of interest that they might be prepared to invest in the company, you're entitled under this agreement to basically see that information and go talk to that party. Again, there are other protections as well that are involved, which are set forth in the term sheet. And what you're really setting the stage for in all this is a negotiation to revitalize the business and preserve your employment. I'll close with that.
Thank you, Michael. Ian?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah. And next we'd like to have John Moses from the strategic and financial consulting firm Merge Global that specializes in transportation entities. John, can you take it from here?
Sure. Thank you, Ian, and good evening, everyone. I just want to make a few brief remarks and kind of give a summary of our the work we've done to date. Our principal focus here is to make a financial assessment of YRC's business plans, finances, and the proposed restructuring based to best inform Tinfink and the Teamsters with actionable information on which to make sound decisions. I'm going to touch on a couple critical issues kind of in a question format just to, I think, put it in a framework that will be helpful for the members. First, and to start off, critical question is, where has the company been, YRC, and where are they now? If you look over the past 12 months, YRC has survived one of the worst freight recessions since World War II. Even with the July 2009 concessions, the company has survived but certainly has not thrived. And even with these substantial concessions and also concessions provided by bank lenders, the past year has been a very challenging one for the company. YRC has not reestablished a strong financial footing. It's maintained adequate cash and resources to meet its daily obligations, but it has relied to a large extent on asset sales, a large tax refund, some financial engineering, and considerable Teamster concessions to meet its obligations. In a nutshell, the company has only survived because of the Teamster concessions put in place in July of 2009. Next, the question you should be asking is, how is YRC doing today? Are they making money again? And the answer is, YRC's recovery has been slow. YRC is still not generating consistent positive operating cash flow. And when we think operating cash flow, we're thinking in terms of what are all the resources required to continue to run the business in a positive way. And that would include both investment of capital, working capital, paying interest, paying pension obligations, and making their daily requirements, including payroll to Teamsters. In that vein, the company is not generating on a consistent basis a positive operating cash flow. YRC shipments is one of the key metrics we look at, and we monitor this on a weekly basis. Shipment volumes, which constitute in the YRC National Division, which constitute about 60% of the company's revenues, have declined consistently over the past year and are only beginning to show some signs of stabilizing, albeit at much lower levels than last year, 2009. In addition, when you look at monthly cash flows for the business, the company has yet to generate consistent and positive operating cash flows. Including all their operating requirements in the past year, these cash flows have generally been negative, and have only the company has only survived because of Teamster concessions, financial engineering, and asset sales. YRC has only begun to generate some positive cash flow in the past couple of quarters, but this has not been sustained and not been consistent. So with that background, the question you have to ask is, what's the next step? And I think you've heard it tonight from the leadership at the IBT, and the question you have to be asking is, why is it necessary for Teamster members to grant further concessions to YRC? And the simple answer is, and I think you're aware of this as well, the snapback in 2011 of both the obligation to restart making pension contributions to the IBT pensions, and secondly, to pay interest to the banks, which have also provided concessions in the past year, would likely cause the company to fail and shut down in the very near future. Why is this? The company is still not generating positive operating cash flow. We've talked about that. Second, the snapback, as we refer to it, of both pension obligations and bank interest, would add another $30 million a month of obligations on a company that is consistently not generating positive operating cash flow to meet those obligations. In addition, bank lenders currently have a roughly $200 million bank facility that falls due at the end of this month. We anticipate if the IBT members ratify this new proposed restructuring agreement that they will renew that facility and we will go along with our business. But without that ratification, we expect those bankers to not renew that facility, and this combined with a snapback will probably or likely cause the company to fail either late in the fourth quarter or early in the first. With that, the question has to be, what needs to be done to restructure YRC and create a really financially stable and stable employer and consistent operating company? And we look at that much of the way that Michael Glanzer just talked about. It really has three critical elements. First and foremost is the proposed restructuring agreement that outlines the Teamster concessions. Those concessions have certain requirements on other stakeholders, most importantly that the lenders in the existing lending facilities will also step forward and do their share. This would include converting a large portion of their debt to equity and reducing the company's overall debt burden, thereby reducing the company's overall interest burden going forward. And thirdly, the third component of the restructuring agreement is with lower debt and stronger operating cash flow, which comes from the Teamster concessions, the company would be able to attract new equity to the company, restore its capital base, and restore its liquidity. As outlined by Michael earlier, the requirement in the term sheet that you should have copies of requires the company raise by the end of the first quarter of next year $300 million in cash equity. Now, this number can be adjusted based on further negotiations, but it still needs to meet a satisfactory standard subject to Tim Fink's final sign-off. With either of those concessions, with either of these two other components, in addition to the Teamster concessions, are not completed, the Teamsters have the right to terminate their concessions and keep the and pull back their support from this agreement. Punchline is, without these concessions, the company is not on a sustainable path. The snapback and the bank debt, a renewal that comes up this month, will cause this company to fail. Alternately, the members have a choice, and that is a choice that they solely will make. If they grant the concessions, it gives the company a good opportunity. It is not a guarantee, but a good opportunity to move forward, come to an agreement with their bank lenders. The bank lenders must do their fair share. And thirdly, this gives the company an opportunity to raise new equity and create a substantial and sustainable and stable employer for Teamsters to work at. In wrap-up, I'd like to say the Teamsters have led the way in saving this company. They would not have made it through the freight recession without the concessions already provided. The Teamsters now have an opportunity to decide their future and the future of YRC. With these concessions, we think that the company has an excellent chance of survival. Without these concessions, we are unfortunately of the opinion that the company will likely fail in the near future. With that, I'll turn it back to Ian Gold.
Hey, John, thank you very much for the report. Could you just spend 1 minute on why the length of the agreement is where, you know, the extension and,
sure,
and why you think that's a critical component?
Sure, and I apologize. I skipped over that in the interest of time, but I'll go back over. That's a very important point. As I think Tyson Johnson has already mentioned, the restructuring agreement MOU calls for the extension of the Teamster contract from March of 2013 to March of 2015. So the question the members should have is, why do we need to do that? Aren't we granting enough concessions over the next year or two to make this deal work? And the answer is, to get both the bank lenders and new equity to invest, or in the case of the bank lenders, to convert their debt to equity, or for a new investor to put cash equity into the company, they want to see a sustainable business plan that shows stronger earnings and stronger cash flows over a sustained period. And our rule of thumb for that is probably a five-year period. What is being proposed here is just about 4.5 years. So we're close enough for our purposes, and we think that's a satisfactory arrangement. But it's certainly at the minimum of what would be required, A, to convince bank lenders I'm going to convert some of my debt to equity, and B, for new equity investors to think about making a new investment in YRC. They don't do that on the basis of a year or two of plans. They really want to look at a plan that has a sustained future, and 4 to 5 years is a pretty good rule of thumb in this business.
Tyson, we just wanted to make sure that our members could hear that we do have experts that deal with corporate restructurings and operational issues in transportation and logistics, monitoring the company's finances, and also advising us as a potential transaction, as we move toward a potential transaction. We'll try to answer other questions as they come up, but I'll kick it back to you.
Thank you very much, Ian, and what you say is very true. If our membership and our local unions had seen what I have witnessed the last couple of months from the actions of Mr. Glanzer and Merge Global, we do have very qualified people assisting us But as you see, brothers and sisters, there are a lot of moving pieces to this. But we have positioned ourselves to where we are at the table. We are at the front of the line. We know what goes on as it goes on, and we are not handed things on a take-it-or-leave-it basis. But before we go into questions, I must thank one group of people. The National Negotiating Committee allowed the formation of a joint subcommittee to negotiate this. That joint subcommittee are the freight coordinators for the freight division. Gordon Sweeten, Ernie Sowell, Ken Bryant, and Bob Papenroth. And I want to thank all four of them for the hard work, along with the IBT staff and team that was put together to achieve this. And brothers and sisters, again, it's not a sales pitch. You make the final decision. And with that, I would ask the moderator to open up questions, please.
Great. We have an enormous number of questions, and we're going to try to get to as many of them as we can. We're already running long, but we're going to get through as many of the ones we're hearing a lot as we can. So our first question is that a lot of folks are hearing at their terminals that you should vote it down, send it back to the committee, and get a better deal. Is there a second chance for YRCW Teamsters if this deal is rejected?
First and foremost, there is no plan B. If you heard Mr. Glanzer and Mr. Moses, there is an ABS due this month. It exceeds $100 million. With the restructuring plan ratified and approved, the company is reasonably sure that they can extend out this ABS for additional years. Short of the plan passing, the banks are going to call the note. The company does not have in excess of $100 million to pay that note off, and the company will close and liquidate. And that's not a threat. That's what exists. It's there. It's a matter of public record. Check it for yourself.
The next question we've been hearing a lot of is that there's been talk about equal sacrifice on this call, and we've gotten a lot of questions, people wanting to know what exactly this equal sacrifice entails for YRCW management.
YRC management will put forth the exact, if not more, in a lot of situations. In some areas, the company is already above the equal sacrifice. But the equal sacrifice will be brought to parity before this goes into effect, not only with management, but with the other parts of the company, USF Glenmore, USF Redaway, all of the non-union operations.
Our next question is about the Chicago locals. Will the Chicago local unions be counted with the other ballots and with the rest of the NMFA?
The Chicago Suburbans, 705-710 Dock, 705-P&D, everything that is signatory to the National Master will count in the cumulative, but those white papers in the Suburbans, along with 710-705, they will be on a standalone vote. That would be clerical, maintenance, and mechanic at any of the white paper agreements, not only in the greater Chicago area, but across the central region, the eastern region as well.
One question we've gotten quite a lot of, is it a coincidence that Zollers announced his retirement last week?
You can call it what you please. We have heard the demands of our members since this started for the resignation of Zollers. He can call it a retirement. He can call it whatever he prefers. But Mr. Zollers is on his way out, and as soon as the new board finds a suitable replacement for him, Mr. Zollers will be gone.
Next question is about pension funds. How will pension funds be impacted by the continued abatement and reduced contributions in the next year or more?
Well, there's no question that the abatement to continue till June 1 and then a reentry of 25%, it has to have an impact. At this point, we do not know We have heard from many of the funds. They will respond to us to let us know. But they themselves have due diligence to do. They have to look at the books of the company. They have to make a determination based on the assets of their fund. The trustees will make a determination what amount of accrual that each participant from each fund will get. But at the present, we do not have that, but the funds are actively working on that process.
Our next question, kind of in a similar vein, if the health and welfare funds don't need their entire allotment each year, can the extra go to the pension?
We have made a predetermination based on what we have seen in the past, based on discussions with the funds. There has been an allocation of 35 cents on the go-forward years for health and welfare. But if there is a reduction of that, that will have to be done by the funds or a recommendation from the funds back to us. We would not have the authority to automatically do that.
Holland is hiring again, and it sounds like New Penn is also doing better. Why are Holland and New Penn tied up in the same restructuring plan with YRCW?
They are tied up in the restructuring plan. Number one, they are both party to the National Master Freight Agreement. They are part of the corporate structure. And as the company has tried to recapitalize, they have, in essence, collateralized all of their companies, not only Holland, New Penn, Redaway as well, the rolling stock, the property. So Redaway, New Penn, Holland is a part of this, good, bad, or indifferent. And if one fails, they all fail. There will not be a situation that YRC closes and the regionals, as we know them, Redaway, Holland, New Penn, continue to operate. They will be a part of the liquidation process just like YRC.
Time for, I think, a couple more. There's been talk about the possibility of profit sharing or wage restoration in the agreement. What are the details of that?
The details of that, there are triggers that create that situation, but the details of that will be worked out with the banks, potential investors on a go-forward basis in the next few months. I could probably ask Mr. Glanzer or Moses, either one, to touch on that again. They did through their initial presentation, but Mike or John, either one of you are welcome to touch on that again.
Sure. It's John Moses. I'll take a shot at that. As I think you answered the question, though, Tyson, part of the issue will be is, you know, we've all looked at a set of projections of how the company will operate going forward. Now the time will tell if we go forward with the restructuring, the ratification, the banks do what they need to do, and we raise new equity, the company will be positioned to do better. And then depending on how much better it does, we are positioning the Teamsters to get a capture, a portion of that upside. But we will also need to negotiate with both the new equity investors and the lenders with regard to what share the Teamsters get and what share the other parties get. And that will be, we've already staked out an initial position. It's pretty consistent with some things that the Teamster have done in the past, but that is subject to further negotiation and obviously is subject to the company recovering and prospering.
Thank you, John.
I think we're well over time, so I think there's just one more question that we have time for, and I think it really, you know, cuts to the heart of the issue. If we ratify this restructuring plan, are there any guarantees that the company will still be around next year?
Brothers and sisters, there are only two guarantees that I'm aware of, death and taxes. The study that we have done, the experts that we have retained, the study they have done indicates that if all the moving pieces of this restructuring agreement come together, that is, our additional sacrifice, an infusion of $300 million operating capital from private equity, the reduction of debt to equity by the banks and other note holders of the company. Our projections, based on the plan the company has put forth to us, the company will be here. But I cannot give anyone a guarantee tonight.
So there was just one more question that someone just asked that that we thought would be particularly appropriate. Sir, would you vote for this contract?
Well, I must tell you, I hold seniority at Roadway Express in Dallas, Texas, and I was asked that very question Sunday at our meeting. And my answer is yes, I will vote to approve the MOU.
And with that, we're about 10 minutes over our time, so I think we should get to the closing. Tyson, would you like to close the call?
Yes, I would. Ed, thank you very much. You guys continue to leave your questions. There will be someone in the freight division that will respond to each question. Thank you again for joining us. Again, it is your decision to make. Think through it. Look at the information. Go to the website. Don't listen to all the bullshit on the streets. Sit down and evaluate this for yourself and your family. And again, I thank the team that helped me do this, and I thank you for taking your time this evening to listen to us. Thank you very much.
If you missed any portion of this call or you have coworkers or family members who missed the call, a recording will be available at www.teamster.org in the next 48 hours. If you have a question that we didn't get to or you'd like to leave us a comment or another question, please stay on the line when we close the call and you'll hear instructions on how to leave us a message and we'll get back to you with answers to your questions. Again, just stay on the line if you have a question or comment and you'll hear instructions on how to leave us a voicemail. Thank you, everyone, and have a good evening.